this episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. I am your host, Derek Loda, and I am thrilled to have today's guest on to discuss partnerships, joint ventures, and moving forward. Today's guest is Lee Fjord. Lee is a real estate professional with over 8 years of experience in various aspects of real estate operations and brokerage, including property management, residential sales, commercial leasing, construction management, and asset management, as well as currently being a commercial broker with Marcus & Millichap. Starting in 2012 by taking over a management portfolio of 20 properties and growing that to over 220 properties under management in 4 years while simultaneously selling over $5 million a year in investment real estate, Lee relocated to St. Louis in 2016 to pursue investments on a larger market with huge opportunity. Lee started with a duplex and accumulated 9 doors in 18 months until finding a partner with similar goals of reaching financial freedom, and with combining their efforts, they could take down much larger and more scalable multifamily properties. They then closed on a 38-unit value-add apartment complex in St. Louis in October of 2019. Lee's mission is to provide clean, safe, modern, and affordable housing to over 1,000 families and while attaining an above average return on investment for his partners and investors. Lee is an avid hiker, paddleboarder, and world traveler, and has a focus on reforestation of our national parks affected by forest fires through a partnership with One Tree Planted, with the goal of donating 1% of distributable proceeds to One Tree Planted and planting 1 million trees in 10 years. Enjoy today's show. Lee, thank you for coming on the show.
Derek, absolutely glad to be here. Super excited to bring some value to your audience.
Yeah, I know for today's episode, digging into the power of partnerships and kind of some things to look out for and to make sure that it's successful. So it should be a really good one, because I think, you know, especially in this industry, as people start to go into it or look into it, you're going to find out that it is all about those relationships. And, you know, people are very, very open to partner even on a per deal basis. So it's important to build those relationships and kind of help everyone propel a little bit faster. So before we get into that, would you mind just giving the listeners a little bit of your story for how you got into real estate and kind of where you're at this point?
Absolutely. Thanks. So I got started in 2012 as a real estate agent and property manager. I took over the property management division of a real estate brokerage down in Destin, Florida. At the time, there were 20 individual single family house and condos under management. Over 4 years, I built that up to over 220 doors under management, was simultaneously selling about an average of $5 million a year in real estate. Got inspired by some of my clients who were developers and large scale investors in commercial size properties, and moved to the Midwest in order to pursue a larger market and also family. So I moved to St. Louis, got my license in Missouri, decided to be a manager, and again, worked for a company here in town that did management, and then moved into brokerage side. Right now, I am a broker with Marcus & Millichap on the net lease side of business, and then I invest in multifamily. While I was doing that, I also picked up several duplexes and four families and singles, and then I bought a 38-unit apartment building after linking up with a partner who's an ex-NFL football player, who is also investing in fours and twos here in St. Louis. So we decided that if we locked arms, we could take it to the next level and go after real properties that are scalable, and went after a few, took down a 38 unit back in October, and it's been off to the races ever since.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting to hear kind of what leads to it, leads to getting into multifamily, but, you know, how did you kind of settle on multifamily? You had experience in, you know, and all of it. Why did you make that switch, into some larger property?
It's the scalability of it. I learned my lessons the hard way, investing my own money in smaller properties, duplexes and fours. And my first duplex took me over a year to do. It was a full, basically a complete gut rehab that I paid cash for, put cash into, worked on the property myself. Took me a year to get it done. It worked well. At the end of the day, I paid for 30 for it, put $100 into it, and it was appraised at 180 when we were all said and done. So I was able to burn all my cash back out of that deal, but it's just not scalable to do that. At least I found that I wasn't going to be able to scale it up to that level to where I could really reach financial freedom within a reasonable period of time. So realized that the best way to really do that is to link up with someone that can complement my, you know, skills and go after larger properties that are truly scalable.
Yeah. Why don't we just jump right into that for why work with partners instead of just kind of trying to make it on your own, especially in this space within real estate, and then kind of how you know, mind just talking about how you found your partner?
Yeah, we met on Bigger Pockets on just a forum chatting about investing in St. Louis. He had recently picked up a four family here in St. Louis. I messaged him, he messaged me, we exchanged numbers. He lives in California, in Northern California, close to where my dad lives. So I happen to be going out there for a ski trip anyways. So I was like, hey, let's link up. We'll go get coffee. So we met up for coffee, and 3 hours later, we decided that, you know, if we joined up, we could really go big into, you know, into multifamily and really create a real business here, as opposed to just two guys dabbling and having fun and him investing out of state and me, you know, doing swinging hammers and painting walls and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, obviously that made that decision that, okay, this could really work a little bit quicker than many probably do. But, you know, what were kind of some of those things that you led you to be able to tell that, okay, this is a partnership that can work? You know, what were kind of those aspects that kind of complemented one another for your style and his, and how you kind of narrowed that down?
Yeah. It's actually really interesting. I had a meeting with a CMBS mortgage broker, and he, you know, I had a discussion with him. What are the qualifications to, you know, to move forward with a loan on a decent sized property? And he lays it out. You know, you need to have a local presence. You need to qualify for net worth, you know, minimum net worth of equal to the loan amount. You have to have liquidity in order to be able to, you know, show liquidity for 12 months of, you know, holding costs on the property. And you have to have experience of owning or managing a similar type property in, you know, a similar type scenario. So I had experience in management, running a property management company, essentially, and I was local and had experience in owning smaller properties. And my partner had a much higher net worth and higher liquidity. So between the two of us, neither of us would have been able to go after a larger property on our own. But if you combine the two of us onto one piece of paper, we could actually go and qualify for the right type of financing for the property. So that was an eye opener. It was like, what? You mean I can't just go buy a $3 million building, even though, you know, like I have the down payment? And no, that's not enough. You have to have the net worth. And he was like, well, I have the net worth, but what do you mean I can't qualify for the loan because I don't have the experience? I've never owned or managed a larger apartment building before. And it was like, no, you need to find somebody who's, you know, who's managed one or owned a similar property. So, yeah, when we realized that, it made all sense in the world.
Yeah, and I think something that would be good for, especially for anyone that's kind of early in their journey into multifamily that might be listening to this, to kind of do an audit of your network. You know, so take a look at obviously yourself, but your, you know, what that liquidity is, that net worth. Okay. Again, that experience, you know, all the factors that go into this. And then, okay, maybe some people that you've discussed about potential partnerships, because each property that you might come across might have a different, you know, person that's the best suit for that for a partnership for it. You know, obviously, if you've had kind of some of those discussions, you've gotten to know them, whether it's over a few hours having coffee, or, you know, it's been a few years that you've known the person, you kind of, you know, there's always ways to put deals together. I know I made that mistake when I was quite early in my journey. I didn't really have an idea of who I really knew in the space, and I didn't think that I could get deals done. You know, whereas now, if some of the stuff that I came across, you know, was coming across my desk, you know, they were off market deals, just direct to seller, kick myself. But the best thing that happened is I went, okay, I need to really assess the situation here and work on building that out. And I think that's something that's so important is knowing how to put the pieces of that puzzle together. So in this case, it worked out perfect. It was exactly the opposite needs that each of you had, you were able to fill. So that's, you know, that's a fantastic situation, and really seemed to go a little bit quicker for that face-to-face. But how long had you kind of been linked up through Bigger Pockets?
We met in, it was February. So we were investing together working together for about 8 months before we actually closed our first deal. It might have even been January, so it might have been a little bit longer than that. But we, after we met face to face, we decided that it would be best to go after something small and go through the process of a closing on an investment property together before taking the plunge and jumping into a larger deal. So we, I found a little house, $27,500 in a decent neighborhood that I felt would add up, pay in an additional maybe $2,500. So we're all in for $30,000. Went through the full inspection, site selection, remodel, and leasing process on a house that, you know, at the end of the day was paid off for $30,000 and rented for $7,000. Through the entire process from beginning to end of owning a piece of property, basically we dated before we got married. And then when we realized that we made a good match and that deal went very well, that we could continue to work together. So if it's a true partnership that you believe is not just a one-off, or is one that you're going to, you know, hold on to or be partners for a long period of time, it might be a great idea to go pick up a $30,000 house and go through the process of closing and negotiations and title work and inspections and remodels and, you know, hiring and firing subcontractors and all of that in order to, you know, have those conversations through the process. You have the same conversations with your partners, regardless of whether it's a $30,000 house or a $3 million apartment building. It's the same steps in the process. It's just on a, you know, a lot smaller scale, you know, it's two zeros less. That's about it.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to go about it. You know, it's just a deal, not necessarily a multifamily deal, but just a deal, see if it works. It's a minimal outlay. So if you find out it doesn't, okay, no big deal. I mean, obviously there's always ways to get out of that, but you know, once you kind of went through that, and even before that point of getting that, that first property, how did you kind of go about determining what the roles are for each of you? Obviously with you being local, certainly imagine more of that day to day, but how did those discussions go and how were you able to, you know, kind of get that clearly defined up front?
Yeah, I heard recently a really wonderful way of describing the best way to build a team. So a team has really four major roles that you need to fill. You have the money, you have the brains, You have the hunter and you have the hammer. You have to be able to fill those roles. And I make a wonderful hunter. I know a lot about properties. I can walk through the basement of a property and tell you what type of plumbing that is, what type of roof that is, how long it probably has on it, what it would cost in order to be able to make those repairs, whether the neighborhood is an area that's within the path of progress, and so on and so forth. I also make, for those same reasons, a really good hammer. Like I can, you know, go in and know what it's going to take in order to, you know, update a property or do the heavy lifting process on a value add deal. And then you really need the, you know, the brains and the, which I hope I have some, but, you know, and I have some to add to the group, but yeah, bringing in somebody, the brains, like the accounting type person, you know, the engineer, the very detail oriented structured person, and then having the money person who, you know, really makes sure that you can move forward with the deal. The money is obviously the one thing that is difficult or the hardest person or people to find. And that's why syndications really help, is because you can do that, raise money from others and fill that role without necessarily having to rely on one person to fill that role.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it just goes through, you might fit two of those and, you know, you have two other people that each fit one, you know, again, it's just various, having various tools in the toolbox and the ways to put the puzzle together, you know, there's always different situations and yeah, just having, I like that. I like how it's broken down. It's very, very simple because, you know, real estate as a whole, it's not extremely complicated, but it takes diligence and, you know, it takes having a team in place. So, you know, what would you say are some things that people should look out for if they're thinking about getting into a partnership? You know,
I think that having clear, understood roles of each partner is extremely important. Being structured in your partnership, knowing who is responsible for what, when those things are supposed to be performed or done, and what the repercussions would be if that person doesn't hold up their end of the deal. That is extremely important. And a lot of times business relationships will involve, you know, buyouts if someone doesn't perform, or any number of different things. So I think that going into it with a clear written understanding in your operating agreement as to who's responsible for exactly what tasks and what ongoing roles and what the associated value is that is to the team. So if someone is going to be using or spending dozens of hours of their time each and every week during the entire ownership of the property on the actual property, they might not necessarily be required to put up as much equity at the purchase as the more passive partner who is not local or out of state or intends to, you know, do less of the day-to-day asset management of the deal.
Yeah. And, you know, on that note, how, I mean, obviously you have one partner for this, but how would you say, you know, you would break it down for what portion of that share of the profits would be kind of split up to each role? How would you really go about that? You know, if you had, you know, brought in another, say you had a few people, you know, how do you kind of go about assigning the values of that?
You know, it depends on the deal, of course. I would say that it is, and a lot on what type of deal it is. So a very stable asset that's fully occupied, let's picture like an A-class property in a A-class neighborhood that is 97% occupied and it's a 120 unit building or larger, and you've got third party property management that handles all of the day to day, and it's a very stable property and is going to require very little effort from an asset management standpoint, then the amount of effort or reward for the boots on the ground partner should be less for something like that. But if you're doing a heavy value add in a C-class neighborhood where that person is going to be at the property 5 or 6 times a week for hours on end and overseeing project management, getting bids for projects, literally like doing work themselves, then they should be rewarded for that time and that effort. And that reward can come in many different ways. I have seen people that are paid hourly out of the company. I've seen people that are given a construction management or asset management fee out of the deal, even on a JV, like even on a partnership. I've seen it where it's not that way, where that person is just happy to be part of the team and they're glad that they're able to come on board and participate on the property. And yeah, it's just about everybody reaching an understanding of what the value is that they bring to the table and what what the equity to ownership should be, what that structure should be like, and what the corresponding efforts are going to be on each party's part.
Yeah. And, you know, it's something that, again, will change off of each property. Every property is unique, but yeah, going through, you know, if someone is the hunter and you find just an awesome, you know, direct to seller deal, it's a home run, you know, to get into a deal like that, you know, right now it the toughest part is finding the deal, not so much finding properties, but finding a deal, you know? So again, based off of various factors, you know, you might be in a partnership with the same 3 people, but you'll have 3 different breakdowns on 3 different properties potentially, or it's just the same. You fill this role, you fill this role, you fill this role, you know? So, there's no template for how to do it. It's all situational, but having those conversations and having a clear understanding of what each individual can do is important up front. And again, defining that, having everything as detailed up front as possible. But you know, what would you say to this point, and then kind of looking forward, what have been your keys to success? How have you, you know, and maybe some things that you've changed over time that have now led to it being a key?
My keys to success are I practice time blocking. So I schedule out my week ahead of time as much as humanly possible. Of course, we all know things pop up, but it's about designating specific blocks of time within each day to take care of the tasks that are most important and need to be done on a daily basis. It's not checking email at any point in time during the day. It's I only check email for, you know, from let's say 10 to 11, and then also from 3 to 4. And those are the only times that I spend any time checking email, unless it's like a very important email that comes through and it's an emergency, or phone calls, like from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. phone calls, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. emails, 11 a.m. to 12, it's, you know, XYZ, and then lunch, and then the whole day is planned. The next thing you know, you're still at the office at 7. Time blocking. It's extremely valuable. Knowing what you have in front of you and what you can really accomplish. That, and I'm still working on this, but delegating tasks to others. I am Mr. Make It Happen. Like literally, I will go and get, you know, clean a refrigerator and move it from one apartment to the other because it's a Friday and the tenant just moved in and the refrigerator broke and everybody else is out off for the weekend, even though I have third party management. Literally did that this last Friday at the 38 unit. But sometimes you have to do whatever it takes. disappointed in myself that I wasn't able to find somebody else to take care of that task for me. But I want to be able to be in a place where I am able to rely on my team to take care of the tasks at hand that should be taken care of by someone other than me, like cleaning refrigerators.
Yeah, I mean, there's an aspect of, you know, that extreme ownership or that make it happen mentality versus, as Jake Stenziano says, the I'm a personality, you know, I'm a do this, I'm a do that. And yeah, just being able to delegate. But I've been reading Deep Work by Cal Newport. And, you know, basically with that time blocking and that delegating, you know, what you're best at, what you know, get in that zone, block it out. And these small distractions, the emails, I mean, emails, text, just have times where everything is blocked out to focus on what you're best at. And what's really going to push you forward, I think, is something that I certainly need to work on as well. I do my best to block it out, but it's staying true to that, you know, and not getting distracted. So yeah, I think those are huge. But you know, again, kind of looking forward, what do you kind of expect to see in the real estate market moving forward? Is your strategy changed based off of, you know, everything that's been going on this year, or are you still kind of sticking with what your original, you know, plans, I guess? Obviously not, you can't plan 100%, but kind of what your forecast was.
Yeah, of course. The 38 unit that we purchased back in October is a refi and roll deal. The game plan is to buy it, improve the value of the property by doing extensive updates to the units and raising the rents. So we're going from an average of a $430 rent to a new market rent of $580. And this last week, I actually broke a record and leased a unit for $610 during COVID. So our leasing efforts are going extremely well. Our remodel program and renewal program are going extremely well. We have increased our gross rents from an average of $15,000 a month to $19,000 and some change per month since October, and we're in July, so it's been less than a year, and I've increased the rents across the board by almost 30%, and we still have a number of leases that are coming up and a number of remodels to do. So our intention is to refi that property, pull the original investment back out of the deal, and put it under a long-term debt structure like a Freddie Mac small balance loan. That's the business plan for that property. And I intend to continue to do projects like that, refi and roll value add deals where I can bring a joint venture team together, take down a deal with some loss to lease aspects that we can take advantage of below market rent. So if we can buy a property with below market rents that needs, you know, some lipstick, then we'll go in and we'll take that deal down, add value through lease ups and proper management and decreasing expenses and adding nice amenities to the property like dog parks and you know, updating and maintaining the property correctly, therefore rationalizing a better, higher quality rent at, or a higher level rent at renewal time frames and for when reletting the apartments, and then refiing the money back out of the deal moving forward with a long-term debt structure. Working on those, expanding to new markets. So I'm expanding to Kansas City right now. So that's a 3.5-hour drive from St. Louis, and it's a very dynamic market, a newer market, a market that has younger properties, you know, and vintage, because it was developed out in a much later than St. Louis was. So in St. Louis, you have many properties that were built in the early 1900s. In Kansas City, you have many properties that were built in the, you know, mid-1970s or 1980s. Which can drastically decrease your CapEx expenses, ongoing maintenance expenses, so on and so forth. So we're opening up to Kansas City. I'm really excited about Kansas City and the markets in between, like Columbia, where Mizzou is located. So we'll be heavily looking at Columbia, Missouri, as well as Kansas City, and continuing to take down projects here in St. Louis as well.
So the stuff that's by Mizzou, would that be more you're looking at student housing or still sticking within that workforce housing? It just happens to be, you know, close to that campus.
Workforce housing. Yeah. It's student housing is a completely different type of product than workforce housing or multifamily. It'd be like saying that assisted living or independent living is the same as multifamily. It's really not. It's a completely different product type. Sure, you've got kitchens and toilets and you know, bathtubs and bedrooms, but the type of person who lives there is completely different. The lease structure is completely different. The services provided are completely different. So that's not our business model right now. Our business model is providing safe, clean, modern, affordable housing to those who are not always available.
Yeah, just stick with what you know, and you know, if down the future you want to expand out from that, again, it goes back to a partnership. You can always partner with someone who has extensive experience within, you know, whatever that other aspect within real estate is. I mean, even if you go into say an industrial space, you know, you don't have to be the master of everything. You're good at what you know, partner with someone that, you know, fills that void. So yeah, that sounds exciting. You got some big stuff ahead, and yeah, getting a second market. It's really interesting too, is just how it's overall just a younger city. So I certainly agree. That's something right now is to look out for, is those, you know, deferred maintenance, just the mechanicals that are coming to the end of their lifespan, and it's stuff that doesn't add to the rent, but it certainly pulls away from the bottom line. So
it definitely does. And you can listen to the podcast and you can learn and read and hear what others say all you want, but there's no replacing experience in the field and truly being there, understanding what the difference is, and in the ownership of the property and the ongoing maintenance of a property that's a little bit older. And yeah, it does make a big difference. And yeah, between expanding to a new market, bringing on new partners, expanding a system in order to add additional partners and money, raising money to our program is going to be really beneficial.
Yeah, big things ahead. I mean, a lot of great insight, and especially, you know, being able to try it out and kind of grow within real estate. You've been around real estate for years, but, you know, kind of seeing that opportunity, pursuing it, finding those partnerships. I mean, it's certainly on the right path towards some great things, and appreciate you sharing that with our listeners. And, you know, before we really wrap up, I just have a couple of quick wrap up questions, and then we'll let you go and continue making some big stuff happen down there in St. Louis. Well, down there for me. So, what does, you know, that word retirement mean to you?
I will always be an owner, operator, investor in real estate. My version of retirement is unlimited ability to control my own schedule. So the ability to spend extensive periods of time traveling the world. I love traveling. I love skiing and paddleboarding and hiking and, you know, traveling the world. And my version of retirement is being able to take a month and go to Italy and not have to be worried about checking emails or whether or not rent got paid or anything like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's so much more as rather than a money or an age, it's just the freedom, you know, truly having freedom. And when you can be at that point financially, it opens up a much more enjoyable lifestyle. And, you know, hopefully that lifestyle then means less stress and longer, healthier life to be able to continue to enjoy it. So, you know, was there a particular event or book or experience, you know, something along those lines that was kind of the key thing that made you take action to get into multifamily?
It was, if there was a particular event, it was joining the Jake and Gino Academy and community. Reading Wheelbarrow Prophets. That book changed the direction of my life. That's probably one of the top 5 books and experiences. It's very, top line, but it was very impactful for me. And big shout out to those guys, Jake and Gino. They are, they're an inspiration, and I'm happy enough to be able to say that they're friends of mine.
And was that something where, you kind of picked up that book and then all of a sudden you were like, okay, this is it. This is it. I'm going to just take that leap and make that investment and get around it. Or did you have a little bit of time in between and kind of mulling things over?
I was running the property management department at the same time, or the business at the time, and got really heavily into listening to podcasts. I remember another experience where I reached out to Joe Fairless over LinkedIn. I grew up in Cincinnati, and he was living in Cincinnati. He had recently launched his podcast. I think it was maybe within the first year of him doing the best ever real estate investing show, and reached out to him over LinkedIn, left him a great review, said, hey, I'm coming to Cincinnati to visit my mom. I'd love to meet with you. I had the great opportunity of meeting Joe Fairless at a McDonald's right next door to the 124 unit where he was living at the time, and his very first project, meeting a guy that went from 4 single family houses to Texas to syndicating a 124 unit deal, and him telling me about what his, and starting a podcast, and what his next steps were. Of course, now he owns something like, 8,000 doors or some crazy nonsense. And that was just back in 2015. So it's been 5 years from him, and he's exploded. And I was lucky enough to meet him face to face. And he took the time out of his day to do that. And that was inspirational, that he was able to put together a deal like that and continue to grow and start the podcast and all that.
And it's amazing to see what some of that exponential growth is for some. And, just because you don't have to have 8,000 units to be successful, to have what your goals are, everyone's number, I guess, is, unique to them. But yeah, someone like that, that's able to take that, kind of propel so fast, and they still took the time out of their day to meet with someone that just reached out on LinkedIn. There's a lot of willingness to add value to one another within this space that really surprised me. I kind of thought that people keep things close to their chest and not really share as much, but it's for the most part there's a lot of willingness to help one another. It's really just changing that mindset of, there's so much out there that we can all be successful. It's not a scarcity mindset of it. And, you really can propel really fast on all aspects. So no, that's awesome to hear. And, it's just once it finally clicks for what it can lead to, and it kind of gets that motivation going, it's being able to continue to keep that motivation and keep things moving forward, having that consistency. But once you see that potential, it's you can't unsee it. So it's great that you were able to join the group, and obviously that's how we met, and had the privilege of being able to have some great conversations, and again having you on the podcast. But just lastly, how do you like to give back?
Yeah. So I support an organization called One Tree Planted. They are an organization that focuses on reforestation. I don't know if I'm using the right word, but they essentially what they do is they have projects all around the world, including the Pacific Northwest, which is the area that I'm very passionate about because I'm an avid hiker and I hike in the Pacific Northwest in Northern California. And they've suffered, dozens of wildfires over the course of the last several years. One Tree Planted, for every dollar donated to One Tree Planted, will plant a tree in your name, essentially. And my goal is within my lifetime to plant 1 million trees. with Lone Tree Planted. I intend to partner with them as on my next venture and have 1% of all the proceeds distributed to myself and my partners and investors to be given directly to Lone Tree Planted so that they can do the good work that they do and plant 1 million trees.
And I think that's something important to keep in mind is that, you know, making money isn't a bad thing. Having money isn't bad. It's what you do with it. And, you know, like yourself, you have this goal. You want to be able to help that. 1 million trees in your name is, you know, is quite the goal. And I'm sure you'll be able to achieve that, especially with the path that you're going on. But, you know, this allows you to have that freedom to contribute to causes like that, you know, or whatever your cause, your charity, your passion is. You know, this can help you to get to that point to be able to make a big change in the world. You know, 1 million trees is that's a substantial forest you'll have going there. But no, that's fantastic to hear. And if you know, if people, listeners, want to get in touch with you and learn a little bit more, you know, reach out to you, what's the best way to go about that?
Yeah, I give out my phone number to everybody, and it hasn't bitten me yet. So my cell phone number is 850-797-1307. If I don't answer, shoot me a text. I will call you back. My email address is very simple. It's lee.fjord@gmail.com. Email me, text me. I'm on Instagram, lee.fjord. Instagram, I'm pretty active there. And Facebook, of course, lee.fjord, Facebook. So find me, follow me, message me, DM, text me, call me, email. I'm available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I love talking about real estate. Willing to bring value to anybody. I'm one of my favorite books is The Go-Giver, and I'm a giver. So, you know, I ask for nothing and I give whatever I possibly can to someone. So yeah, reach out anytime.
And, you know, can certainly attest to that. We've had great conversation. You're always willing to add some things that are gonna, you know, help me out and certainly look to, continue to build this relationship and help you some more, and, highly encourage listeners to reach out to you. You got a lot of great experience thus far, and, you're just all around, you know, a wonderful person to connect with. So I will have all of that contact info, in the show notes. So if people just want an easy link to it, check out the show notes. And yeah, again, highly encourage you to reach out to them and, you know, see where the world takes it. So thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. Wish you all the best and look forward to future conversations as you continue to grow.
Same. Can't wait to see you at the next event, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. Please be sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on Facebook and Instagram. The links will be in the show notes. And if you enjoy the show, please be sure to share it out on social media so that we can reach more and more people to help educate them about the opportunity that multifamily investing provides to help reach their version of retirement sooner than later. Take care, everyone.